Well, it was Texas, it was Tennessee, and it was what I had committed me. Well, you were unlike anything before, like magic devil killer, I was yours. It was the early days of rock and roll, and it was Otis, it was Memphis song. It was a plane crash overnight, and it was burning fast and burning bright. Baby, don't you talk no more. That look is loud enough. You don't have to tell me how.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to another one of these. We've got stuff for you. So, since we last talked, some things have happened. Not really. Nothing's happened. Who am I kidding by saying something has happened? Because nothing has happened. I got back from a trip. I was at a professional conference where it was a book expo, and going to these professional conferences with library and book people, it's really confirmed something for me, which is this like suspicion I've had, and now I'm sure of it, which is that like, for some reason, everything I like is something that assholes like. Okay, like, I like books. And then you go to these book conferences, and man, there's a lot of fucking assholes there. Maybe they're just the loudest, but I swear to God, three times, you know, I'd be looking around in a... So it's like an exhibition floor. It's like a Comic-Con or whatever, right? And it's just a bunch of publishers, and they have books, and they have giveaways and author signings. And some of these author signings are, you know, a lot of people in them. And you have to get in line, and then the line curls around the... Imagine the convention floor is viewed from above as a grid, right? Curls around the square, and then it has to go across an aisle of traffic in order to go somewhere else. And they have people who stand, you know, this is the first person in line after the break, and this is the first person in line on the other side of the break. You know, they have, like, official people who have to stand in line and do that in order to make sure, I guess, that, you know, no cuts, no butts, no Chinese coconuts. Whatever a Chinese coconut may be. I do not know, nor do I care. Three times, I'd be looking at a booth somewhere, and I swear to God, I was looking in this booth, and this troll woman, this, like, tiny little... balding little weirdo, like, someone came up and asked her, hey, is this the end of the line? And she turns to me and she's like, no, and you're not in line, and said that to me, which I was like, yeah, no, I'm not. I was not even actually aware that there was a line here. I was looking at the books in this booth that you're wrapped around, and I was not aware that there was even a line, but thank you for yelling at me that I'm not in line. And it's, like, so embarrassing. When you go to these things, I don't know if this is exclusive to book and library world, okay? But when you go to this shit, people get so fucking uptight about the possibility that you're cutting in line. I think I told this story before, but it bears repeating because it lives in my memory of I went to American Library Association conference in Las Vegas, which was hilarious. Because as you check into the hotel, it's like a game of spot the librarian that's never been easier. This whole thing, by the way, this whole like sexy librarian thing, over it. Okay? Are there sexy librarians? Sure. I'm sure there are many a sexy librarian out there. Are most of the ones that I see at conferences... like the cover of a, you know, noirish romance novel where it's a librarian who has a rockin' bod barely contained in a low-cut and high-cut dress. And it's like, it's basically like, oh, she's like a superhero lady with glasses and her hair's in a bun. It's like, oh, if her hair's in a bun, that's a trick. I can't tell that she's hot because her hair is in a bun. No one's ever been attractive that way. So as soon as I see the bun hair, I don't even bother looking at the body. I guess that's the premise there. Not a lot of the people I see look like that. So one of the speakers was BJ Novak from The Office. And he, you know, he had a book of short stories and then a kid's book come out. And so after his little talk, you know, he was signing. And I was there with some other people I knew. And so the guy I was there with was waiting in line to get a book signed. And I got out of the convention hall real late. And so I was just like, I'm not going to wait in this line. It's going to take fucking 45 minutes to wait in this line. And it was the last thing of the day. And I was like, I just don't care that much. So he's waiting in line and I'm standing there outside the line. There's like poles, you know, with those things stretched between them. Like at a museum where it's got those like seat belts that stretch out so you can't get there. So I'm outside of this box, just following along, clearly just chatting with my friend. You know, we're just talking about whatever. And this lady, who's like five people behind my friend, stops me at one point and says, "Excuse me, are you planning to follow along, you know, this whole time?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm not in line. I'm just talking to my friend. I'm not getting a book signed." She's like, "Okay. Well, when we get closer to Mr. Novak, I'm going to want to take a picture and I'm going to want to have like an unobstructed view to take a picture." And I was so fed up with this kind of bullshit by the end of this that I was just like, all right, whatever. I'm going to just wait over there. You know, because I was like, this fucking fool is, and my friend is like five people ahead of this lady. So it's like, you're going to have plenty of fucking time to take your stupid fucking picture from 25 feet away, unobstructed by somebody who's just chatting with someone in line. Like, that is so crazy to me. And it's so crazy to me, too, because if I was in that line, I would be like, you know, I'm 10 minutes from the front of this line. And when I get up there, I'll be at the front. Let's say the worst case scenario. Let's say I am a horrible shithead and I was just going to cut in line. Fucking cares. Who cares? I wasn't going to cut in line, but even if I did, so what? She'd still get her shit. It doesn't matter. Now, I'm not a believer in cutting in line. What I'm trying to say is, like, let's give someone the benefit of the doubt. They're probably not cutting in line, obviously, because it's not like I joined the line. I was walking outside of the fucking things talking to someone who was in line, right? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Because it's not like the worst case scenario is, oh, well, if he gets in line, then I won't get my book signed, right? Then I'd be on your side. No, the worst case scenario is, well, then I'd be slightly delayed in getting my book signed. And also someone would have been a jerk. Who fucking cares? God damn. And then, you know, so at this book expo, I'm getting yelled at by this troll woman about cutting in a line that I was not even aware I was in, and to this day, do not know what it was for. I don't know what the line was for. I don't know where it was going. I don't know what would meet me at the end. I can only assume or pray that it was some guide to not being a horrible troll bitch, because that's what she needed, big time. This was not my only run-in with this type of person, though. You know, I had like two other ones with that same shit. And people are just so fucking rude and so like, oh, me, I got to get mine. I'm going to assert myself and get what I want. And it's like, you don't have to be, like, we're on the same team here, by the way. We're clearly all on the same team. We don't need to be so fucking pushy and mean about it. But anyway, it's like these things always just confirm, you know, like, okay, something else I like is coffee and I enjoy it and I enjoy trying different kinds and places that people like. But again, the other people who enjoy it are dicks. So we're walking downtown in Chicago and Poonmaster Flex joined me later in the week. And she's like, do you want to get a coffee? And I was like, sure, there's this place right here. And she's like, oh, is that like Peter coffee or like Starbucks coffee? And so what she means by that is like, I like black coffee. And when she gets a latte or something at a place I like, It just tastes like coffee. There's no, you know, like vanilla latte or whatever. And she doesn't like that. And I was like, yeah, it's probably me coffee. And she's like, well, can I just go to Starbucks and then we'll go to your place? And I was like, all right. So we go into a Starbucks. She gets her thing. And then we're going through my place to get a thing. And then we're just going to leave. And I swear to God, there was this girl in line behind us fucking staring daggers at Poon Master Flex's Starbucks cup. Which I was like, fuck you, lady. First of all, you're a customer here. You don't even own the store. Secondly, we're just taking it and leaving. And third, who fucking cares? She doesn't like this kind of coffee. Like, I recognize that although I like that kind of coffee, not everyone does. And I don't think that someone's bad because they're like, oh, well, you don't like the taste of black coffee? Most people don't. Not many people do. I do, but I don't think that makes me like superior to somebody else. Okay? In fact, I kind of think that the people are better who can just admit what they like and they like what they like. You know, sometimes I feel a pressure to not assert myself for exactly what I want because it's just very, I don't know, I have a fucking mental problem. But, you know, I like it that someone's like, listen, I like this. I like this bullshit, so I don't want your bullshit. So it's like that, and douchey people love that. You know, douchey people, maybe the problem is just that everyone's an asshole, or maybe the problem is I'm an asshole, and that's why I like asshole things. I don't know. I don't know what the problem is, but there's a problem. And I definitely have not found my fucking people. I'll tell you that right now. Of course, traveling means spend a little time at the airport. I don't want to go over this in too much detail because we've all talked about the airport, right? There were some highlights. I had some highlights, like always. I had probably two highlights on the plane. One was on my flight into Chicago. A lady got up to go to the bathroom from her seat probably 5 minutes before the wheels touched the ground, which if you've ever been on a plane, you know, is like the plane has been descending for like a half hour. You're awfully close to the ground. Horrible time. Like, this is the worst time to get up and go to the bathroom. And, you know, you've been told 100 times. There is a tiny light above every single seat that shows a buckling seatbelt. And when it is illuminated, you are supposed to stay in your seat unless you desperately, you know, I guess I always wondered, like, all right, well, if I'm going to shit myself, if I was like, look, I am going to crap myself, whatever. I feel like they'd let you go. If you're just like, listen, I have a problem and I may need to get up and use the restroom at an inappropriate time and I am so sorry. But like this lady just nonchalantly gets up and the flight attendants are strapped in, which, and also if you've ever flown, you know, they don't fucking strap into the last minute. They always got to daredevil the shit. It does send a mixed message to me because it's like, well, we do this all the time and we're not strapped in, but you need to be strapped in. And I'm like, well, I mean, all I'm doing is sitting here. What difference does it make? But, you know, they were even strapped in and the person's right by the bathroom is like, man, we are landing. And she's like, oh, and then just goes back to her seat. So that happened. The other one was, so I get on the plane on the way out. Now, lots of people I've talked to really like this Southwest Airlines system, which is you buy a ticket and then, you know, 24 hours before your flight, you check in and then you get a boarding number. You don't get like a seat number. You get a number and that's the order in which you board. And so what happens is, you know, a bunch of people get on the plane. They fill the window seats. They then fill the aisle seats and then there's a bunch of middle seats. So someone has to fucking get up. It takes about 1,000 hours to load a goddamn plane on Southwest. And it also, it causes these weird situations like, you know, I'm flying back and so you have a boarding pass number, but it's not like everyone else can see this number and you have to line up based on number. And I'm like 50. And this guy is like, what number are you? And I was like 50. And he's like, oh, I'm 48. And then he's like, well, you can just go. And I was like, it's fucking two numbers. Like, I don't care. you know, I was like, go ahead, it's fine. And he's like, no, it's cool. And I was like, no, really, I don't care. Like, it's fine. And it was like one of those things, you know, where you're at the stoplight and the other person is like waving you on, or the stop sign, and the person's waving you on, and you're like, no, no, you were clearly here first, just go. And they keep waving, and finally you go, but then they start to go because you were like, go. And you're just like, just fucking go in the spot where you're supposed to go, and it makes it easier for everyone. By being a nice guy, you're just being annoying. Like, it's like you're pretending to be a nice guy, but you're also just setting the tone. You're like, I'll decide when people go at the stop sign. You know, not normal procedures or laws. Me, I'll do it. So anyway, I'm just not a huge fan. I'm not a huge fan of this system. But I sat in the front row because everything was full, so someone was going to have to sit in middle seats. And I sit in this front row because I was like, well, whatever. That, at least, at the very least, if I'm going to have to sit in a middle seat, I don't have to fucking wait for everyone to get off the plane. I'm going to be on the plane 40 minutes less than everybody else. And I sat next to a dude with an artificial leg. And, like, not just a fake leg, but, like, one of those science-looking legs. And he had shorts on, which seems to be fairly common with these artificial leg. I feel like I've seen a lot of dudes in shorts with those legs, which maybe that's like a crucial thing. Like maybe it's hard to wear pants or something, but I always think it's weird. I guess I think it's weird because I'm like, I hate wearing shorts. So if I lost a leg, would that mean I have to wear shorts all the time? Obviously that wouldn't be the worst part, but it would be one more kick in the balls to be like, well, now you also, your fashion decisions are going to be pretty subpar because you got to wear cargo shorts 24/7, and the cargo parts are going to actually have, like, you know, leg fixing tools in them and shit. But I sat next to that guy as opposed to on the other side because I was like, well, this is a 2.5 hour flight. He's probably not going to get up, right? He's probably going to just chill out there. I don't know. And then I was like, well, maybe he will have to get up. Maybe he has to, like, move his leg around or some shit. And I was like, I wonder how long he's had that leg. And then, you know, I just thought about that a lot, and the flight just flew by. Yeah, flew. There you go. See how much? I wrote that down. I did not write that down. So here's the thing. I've talked before about, you know, how it should be different at the airport and the airline. And I have some suggestions. Like, if I made an airline, this is what I would do. Because the thing that I hate about going to the airport is basically it's like going to do a, 8-hour prison sentence. You wake up super early in the morning, and then you just go to wait in a line, and then another line, and another line. Everyone treats you like shit. You don't really know where you're going all the time, and people, I guess some people do, I don't know. So here are some things, though, that I'm like, these would improve it. Number one, I've listened to the speech, the safety speech, many a time getting on the plane. I'm very familiar with the speech because they give it every time. And they're always like, sir, please take off your headphones. And I'm like, why? I could give you the speech. I could tell you right now. It's like, oh, okay, notice that there are exits at the front, rear, and middle of the plane, you know. Please notice whichever one's closest to you. And I'm like, oh, believe me. I read this magazine thing that was like, how to survive in a plane thing. And it's like, oh, count the rows in case it's full of smoke. And then I was like, oh, I'm glad I thought it. I'm glad I'm thinking about that. I know the oxygen will drop down. And if that happens, go ahead and just put it on. Put yours on before you help someone else. And also, you know, the bag may not inflate, and that is not a cause for alarm, which I think is really funny, too, because it's like, yeah, I don't think that would be what I was worried about. It's like we're going down fucking spinning towards the earth, and it's like, hey, my bag's not all the way inflate. I push the little boom button. My bag's not quite inflated fully. I can see it seems semi-inflated, but is that a problem? Should there be more pressure? Like, who gives a shit? Also, I kind of feel like in some situations where the masks drop down, I might just be like, I'll pass. I'd rather pass out in, like, you know, 30 seconds from whatever oxygen deprivation and get lightheaded than be fully aware as I plummet to my doom. Thanks. Given those options, it's like I told someone once, you know, it's not like plane crashes aren't scary because of the death. It's the like 4 minutes of peeing myself as we're, you know, spinning and just going towards the ground at 1,000 miles an hour. That's the part that's scary. So as the security thing has, or the whatever, safety dance, has told me a bunch of times, I'm very aware that there are 3 exits to the plane, which begs the question to me, why can't there be 2 entrances? You get in that hallway, it goes into the one fucking door near the front, and it takes forever because you're just in a single file line, you're waiting for these assholes to put their shit up top, you know, and then find a seat and all this crap. Well, why can't you just have that long hallway and then, you know, there's a second hallway that splits off the first hallway and goes to the back of the plane? It would take, I don't know, according to my calculations, with twice as many exits and entrances, it would take half as long to fill the fucking plane. You could cut that time in half. That would be nice, right? Okay. Here's another thing. I would change a lot of the things and how they're oriented to be based on how many times you've flown in the last 2 years. Because here's the thing, you can tell at every step of the way the people who know what the fuck they're doing and can get through the line and the people who are holding it up for everyone. All right? Like you get to the desk. People, hear me. You go to the check-in desk, right? You're going to check a bag or whatever. Checking a bag because you're not a fucking animal who needs to be with your bag all the time. You're like, I cannot be separated from my bag for 2 hours. And you're the person, you know, who's got to be right next to your bag, even though it takes you forever to get off the plane. And by the time you get off the plane and go take a dump, because it seems like every stall in an airport has been dumped in 5,000 times, by the time you get to the baggage thing, your fucking stupid baggage is circling the drain anyway. But you're like, no, I can't be bothered to do that. So here's what I think. Like, okay, so the check-in line. There should be a check-in line where it's like, hey, if you've flown twice in the last 2 years or more, you go to this line. Because those people, when they get to the front, they have their fucking ID and their fucking boarding pass out. When you're waiting in a line, people, you can get out the thing that you're going to need when you get to the line. When I stand in a Starbucks line, I take out my money and wait in line. Because then when I get there, they don't have to tell me the total. And then I'm like, this is going to cost money. I guess I better get out my wallet. Or when you go to a fucking Wendy's and you're in the drive-thru and, you know, they tell you the total and they say, pull to the second window. And then these assholes pull to the second window. You see them open the little door and they must tell them the total. And then the person is fumbling around in there. What are they doing? They've been waiting in line for 10 fucking minutes for some other stupid car. Then they get up there and they don't have their money out. Why? Why? It makes no fucking sense. So here's what you do, people. And here's how you can tell the people who know what the fuck they're doing. They go up to the counter. When they're the next person in line, they are holding their boarding pass and their fucking ID. They're ready to go. Then, what are you doing? You're like sitting in your car at the Wendy's drive-thru, not having your ID out. What are you just, you're just sitting there thinking about fucking child porn or whatever monsters like you think about when you're not getting your ID out, when you're making everything take forever for everyone. Jesus goddamn Christ. So that's one. Then in security, obviously, that security is like totally rando. It's just like, oh, okay, well, you go in this line, you go in that line, whatever. And they need to have lines that are like, hey, are you an experienced flyer? I'll tell you this. I'm not super a huge friend of the white businessman type, the white bro type, but they fucking know how to go through the security line. They don't, you know, you don't have to tell them to put their laptop in a separate thing. You don't have to tell them they can't have their wallet as they go through. It's like these weird old people and all these jerks who you're like, God, okay, I guess you haven't flown in like 5 years and that's fine. But like you're holding up everyone. You know, and shouldn't they have a line where the security guard is yelling at everyone about, like, you can't have liquids? We know. Me and the people who've flown, we know. We don't need you to yell at us. It's like, it must be horrible to be in prison because the guards are always yelling shit for the benefit of the new guy. And you're just like, I have been here for 14 years, longer than you have. And I've heard this twice a day for that entire 14 years. And I've done the math on that because what else am I going to do all day? But that's way too much. Okay. And this is, I'm begging people for this. This will never happen because it's not a money-making endeavor. I think there should be separate flight times that are family flights and then flights that are not family. And what that basically means is little kids. And I'm talking about kids who are like below the age of 6. Because when you're like 6, you can sit in a fucking chair and just whatever. You know, it's fine. I'm not like mad at kids that are scared and stuff. I'm tired of fucking babies on the plane. They're yelling. They're crying. It's horrible. And where are these babies going? Where are they going? I know where they're going. They're going to see family. Tell your fucking family to come see you. You pushed out a goddamn baby. The least they can do is get on a plane and come see you. It's not that hard. Okay, here's the last thing that my my airport would have. When you're waiting at the baggage claim, you do not need to stand right up against the baggage claim. Because what happens is everyone's clustered around it, and then you see your bag come in. You have to like push your way through this crowd, and everyone looks at you like you're an asshole. And you're like, listen, if you didn't all crowd around this thing, it's simple, okay? If you have to stand up next to it, stand up next to it, take 5 huge steps backwards. If everyone did that, then it's like, oh, well, when I see my bag, I can step forward and get it. So my airport has a huge red stripe around that on the floor. And if you stay on the red stripe for more than like 10 seconds, you get a terrible electric shock. You probably won't make it. Because we just, apparently we need to enforce politeness on the world. So there you go. That's my airport study. The city's great. Chicago's fun. I recommend it. Great food. If you like food. Now, I will say it's, you know, it's a carnivore paradise or an omnivore paradise. I don't know. I'm sure they have great vegan and vegetarian food too, but it's, you know, it's a stockyard city. What can I say? But it's great. That's probably the best part. however, something I got tired of on this vacation for some reason, and something that I hate on every vacation. I hate how people will like talk about a city. Usually it's the city they live in. And be like, blank is for tourists, right? And you hear this all the time. Like in Chicago, it's like, oh yeah, the Sears Tower is for tourists. The Bean is for tourists. You know, if you're in Vegas, oh, the Strip is for tourists. That's not where the real people go, the people who live there. And I hate that. I hate when people say that. I mean, I know that. Yes. And do you know what I am? A tourist. I'm not from here. I'm on vacation. I'm touring your city. And you know what my city doesn't have? A giant bean that looks like the fucking T-1000 Terminator. My city doesn't have that. And it doesn't have it in a spot where it reflects a bunch of the buildings downtown and looks kind of cool. My city does not have a fucking building that's like a quarter mile tall. I don't have a pier. Even if it's like a tourist trap with a Bubba Gump shrimp, I don't have a pier. We don't have water where I'm from. You know, we don't have a Las Vegas Strip. We don't have a block or a huge, you know, several miles you can walk down holding a crazy foot tall beer. We don't have these things. So I know these things are for tourists. And like when I go on vacation, I like to do a mixture. Okay. I like to eat somewhere that, you know, people like to eat and, you know, have a drink at a bar where people like to go. But I also like to go to, you know, the weird shit that you don't have, that I don't have. that I can only really do where you are. You know, it's kind of like, and I get it. I know that when you live in New York, you don't fucking go to the Statue of Liberty every weekend. And you don't go up to the top of the Empire State Building and all that stuff. And I know you're like, eh, it's not that cool. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. I don't have to get a fucking boner from the view at the top of the Empire State Building. That's not really the point. Like, it's kind of like to do something that you can't do, you know, and to do these iconic things for yourself. It's fucking, it's crazy. People who live in a city always say that, but then you like go tour another city and it's like, what do? You just go to like a dive bar? Why? Is it that different from where you live? I mean, I don't know. I can eat at a crappy Subway here all the time. I can do that all the time. I can go to a crappy dive bar here whenever I want. You know what I mean? I can sit around in a crappy apartment with some people and drink beers anywhere, right? I don't know. It's fun. It's fun to do things, and it's fun to have a little mission when you're on vacation to not just... I think it's fun. And I think people shouldn't be like ashamed of wanting to do the touristy things too, because they're fun. Like most of the time when I've done a touristy thing, it's like sometimes it's not great, but sometimes it's pretty cool. And sometimes it's like, most of the time, you know, it's not amazing in and of itself, but it's like, eh, it gave me a trajectory for the day. I walked through some other neighborhood to get there. I don't know. Because when you go on vacation, like to Chicago or New York or whatever, or at least when I go on vacation, I'm not like zooming around in a taxi from, you know, Statue of Liberty to Times Square to whatever. It's like I find a place to stay and I'm walking walking 5 miles a day. We walked 7 miles the first day we were in Chicago. Like we saw a lot of shit. And, you know, we rode the train and whatever. Like we didn't get in a car the entire time we were there. And so it's kind of like, I don't know, man. It gives you something to do. Gives you something to do besides going to a coffee shop and getting the fucking mad dog look from someone who's like, you drink Starbucks? Okay. Fuck everybody, I guess is what I'm saying. Well, I have been studying a white trash couple at my apartment. And, you might say it's not fair to call them white trash, but you don't even know who they are. So there. Who's in a better position to judge, me or you? And I saw them in the parking lot, slothing their way to a car, which I was amazed by, because usually they just stand on the fire escape and smoke. And they stand across from each other, silently doing things on their phones. Well, they're silent. Their phones are extremely loud. And I decided, like, we need some good stereotypes for white trash, because that, I think, will... This is my solution. You know, people are like, let's do different pronouns or whatever, and I'm like, eh, let's just, like, come up with some that sting for everyone, and then, you know, then we'll all... I'm going for a mutually assured destruction kind of path. Which kind of worked out for us, right? Like me and Russia, we didn't destroy each other. So I wanted to start, you know, perpetuating some stereotypes of white trash. And here are the two that I have so far. And this is one, the first one I've experienced in multiple occasions in multiple venues, which is that white trash play mobile games on their phone, usually casino-type games, with the volume extremely high. Like, as loud as it'll go, and you're just hearing slot machine digital crappy sounds over and over. So that's one thing. That's one hallmark of white trash. That's something that, like, white trash love doing that the rest of us look down on. Here's the other one. I feel like white trash are ever opening the door of their vehicle either to stop sign or like at a in a parking lot and dumping liquids out of a container, whether that be a coffee cup or a Coke bottle or whatever, that doesn't really matter. They're just always, it seems like they have a container full of liquid in their car and they want to dump out the liquid for some reason, but keep the container. And this is always unclear to me what they're doing and why and how they have all these liquids and why they can't just throw the whole thing away or why you're not just dumping out the liquid. You know, there are people like, I'll just dump this coffee out on the street. And you're like, really? Why? I don't understand it. But that's another one. So there you go. That's our new segment. Stereotypes of whites. Stereo whites. Stereo twites. Stereo twites? Is that good? I had this week another golf tournament. This is our annual tournament that I pretend is for retarded kids, but really it's for cancer kids, I think. It's the Children's Miracle Network, and I don't really know what it is, although I partially blame the Children's Miracle Network, and here's why. So a golf tournament, for anyone who's never been involved, I recommend this. Now, let me tell you something about golf, because I did not know this, and I don't think most people know this, because I think when most people hear about golf, they're like, I don't really like golf. And I say, I don't think you've really played golf the way I play golf. When you go to golf, there's no fucking test. Nobody knows that you don't know anything about golf. The first golf tournament I played in was literally the first time I had played grown-up golf on a grown-up golf course. I knew nothing. I don't know the rules. I don't know what direction I'm supposed to be going. I have no fucking idea. And I still don't know which clubs I'm supposed to be using in which situation. And here's the thing. Nobody knows that you don't know what you're doing. It's not like there's people standing around like when you see golf on TV watching you and evaluating like, wow, he's going to use a 3-wood there? That seems like a bad idea. No one is watching you. Except your team, of course. So that's part one. If you just walk around like you know how golf works, everything is awesome. And everything's cool when you're part of the team. Now here's something else I'm going to tell you that I think is a golf secret. Most people aren't that good at golf. And the thing is, like, when you play in a tournament like this, okay, so you tee up a ball, and let's say it's a par 4, which means like, well, you know, a good golfer will get it in 4 strokes. So you drive, you hit it maybe like once or twice more to get it on the green, and then you have 1 or 2 putts depending on how many you've spent, and that's par. Most people don't succeed at that. Most. And the thing is, like, let's say it's a par 4 and you hit it, I don't know, 8 times. No one cares. No one's going to know. No one will ever know that you're that bad. And you write your fucking score on a little card with a shitty pencil. I have never kept score during a game of golf, ever, because I do not care. And I know that I'm not. What am I going to do? Win? I'm like, oh my God, I set a course record? No, that is not going to happen. So here's the thing. I recommend you go to one of these tournaments. Now, these tournaments that I've played in are all the same. They're a 4-man best ball tournament. And what that means is, you know, you all hit from the same place. And then you see, like, all right, well, here's where my ball went. Here's where so-and-so's ball went, and so on. You find the best one, and then you all hit from there. And then, you know, everyone's hits from that one go wherever, and then you all hit the best one from there. So really, all you have to do is have one time where you hit the ball throughout the day and they play from your ball and you've contributed to your team. Once you do that one time, kick back and relax, baby. You've helped the team. And then here's the other thing. Something I've come to understand about most activities is there are like two ways to do it. Fun and drunk and seriously. I would take my normal rafting as a perfect example of this. I know there are people who are like wearing a helmet and they're in a kayak going down rapids and waterfalls and shit. And then there's me, whose greatest danger is sunburn because I pass out in the bottom of a boat and my shorts aren't long enough to cover my knees. And because I've had, you know, 8 Bud Light Limes in the last 20 minutes. That is rafting for me. And that is golfing for me. So, I mean, and you know, there's a lot of screwing around to be done in golfing. I emerged from a golf game with temporary tattoos on my neck that are mistaken for hickeys. I, you know, take these giant goo splat balls and throw them at my teammates. We have used, you know, all kinds of these tricks. I mean, you hit a ball off the top of a breakfast burrito or a beer can. You get so drunk that you end up wearing a Spider-Man mask and smoking because you think, like, this is a job for Spider-Man. This is how golf is played. This is why it's fun. So to the naysayers, I say golf is fun. And the reason it's... The reason this is the secret is, like, everyone tries to make it seem like this important, esoteric, difficult-to-understand game, and it's totally not. It's just because they don't want a bunch of fucking rubes, yahoos, casino game players on their phones to come in and ruin the fun. Because it's their fun. They don't want to share it. And as you know, I'm not a fan of... you know, the lessers sharing my fun. I don't want someone in there playing their casino game. So, yeah, so we played this golf tournament every year. And here's the thing that I think is really weird about this particular tournament. So, you know, most tournaments, as opposed to just going to golf, kind of involve like a charity or something. And they cost more. You know, it costs like $100. This is probably the worst part of golf. But I will tell you, I mean, this tournament, we were golfing for like 5.5 hours. We were out there screwing around, drinking beers, and hitting golf balls. That's a pretty good hourly rate, if you ask me. But anyway, this tournament always begins the same way, which is, you know, you eat a lunch and... for me, that means eating a lunch and then going back through the line and getting another sandwich for the road. Because it's like, well, why not? Then you're sitting in the golf cart, you're ready to go, you've got a bucket of beers, which this year, they ran out of buckets. Which, you know, it was no tragedy, because this guy just... used 2 King Supers bags, filled them with ice, and then put beers in them. And it was extra great because I was like, it's like he knew who we were and was instructed, like, don't give them a bucket. They'll just, like, screw around with it or run it over or something. And so we just walk out to these carts with these bags of beers. And it's like, here's your bags of beers, fellas. Have a good golf. And so you're sitting there with your bag of beers and your, you know, extra semi-stolen sandwich. And then they always have a kid or like a mom come out and talk about how they were in the children's hospital, they were going to die and all this stuff. And, you know, the Children's Miracle Network really helped them. And so, you know, your golfing, your money today will really benefit the Miracle Network, which, great. You know, I'm stopping myself from saying fuck them. And here's why. Why would you, this is like of all the times to be like, hey, by the way, kids cancer is a thing. And let's talk about how shitty it was when I had kids cancer. Because I'm like, listen, that sounds horrible. And I'm not trying to be like, you're just harshing my mellow and that sucks. But that's kind of what's happening. And like, you're telling me kids cancer sucks and that the Children's Miracle Network is important. I get it. I just paid like $110 to that charity, right? Like I just paid the money. I'm into it. We're helping. I've done more for the Children's Miracle Network than I ever thought I ever would. And granted, it's not purely altruistic. But it would be a little bit like, imagine you go to a golf tournament. Not a golf tournament, because, you know, I think most people don't think that's fun. Imagine you go to a baseball game, right? And you're like there, you're having a hot dog, you're having a beer, and the baseball game benefits like an animal shelter. And so, you know, you bought the ticket, and even maybe at the front, you know, you bought a ticket to a baseball game, and that ticket was like $110, because they're like, well, we want to give more money to charity, and you're like, all right, I'm into it. You get in the baseball game, you've got your beer and your hot dog, and then they start playing like the fucking Sarah McLachlan, like Beaten Dogs commercial. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I understand that that's what this is for and that what I'm helping out here is all that. But like, I've done the helping out part. Why are you still burdening everyone with these feelings? Like, it's not a good venue. It's like if you were having a real emotional moment with your mom and you were out having a lunch, but you'd accidentally gotten really drunk before and you're having a blast. And then she was telling you about like how, you know, sometimes I felt like I never really understood about how you could be raped in a marriage. But then and then you're like, oh, my God, I am not. I don't want to invalidate your experience here, but boy, am I not in the state of mind or frame of sobriety to really deal with this and talk to you about this right now. Like, this is just bad timing. It's just bad timing for everyone. Well, for me, mostly, but wow. I just don't feel like you're going to get the all of me that you would have gotten had this come up at a different opportunity. So that's my least favorite part of this tournament, I gotta say. I could do without the little speech of, like, I nearly died. Also, last year, it was the mom of a kid, and I wasn't real clear on whether or not the kid survived. I was pretty sure the kid was not alive. And, you know, the Children's Miracle Network had helped him get treatment and whatever, and I was kind of like, how do you say it? You can't. You can't not be a dick. There's no way for me to not be a dick when I'm saying or even thinking, listen, lady, I know you got a dead son. I kind of came out here to have, like, a good time. And you just telling me, I don't know. It'd be like if you were waiting in line at Six Flags and they're like, everyone who rides this roller coaster, it goes to benefit the children's hospital. And then they just have a mom who's like shaking your hand when you get on the roller coaster saying like, thank you so much. My son died this morning, but you know, whatever. And then you're on the roller coaster and you're just like, well, that kid's dead, huh? That's really, and they're like, how was the roller coaster? And you're like, I don't know. I was just thinking about some fucking dead kid the whole time. I didn't really pay much attention to the loops, the loop, the loop or whatever. Just kind of thinking about my own impending mortality and all that, so not ideal. But you know, I don't know, how do you say that without sounding like a heartless bastard? I guess you're just a heartless bastard, and I'm okay with that distinction. So there you go, there's another stereotype of whites or heartless bastards. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Hey, get on iTunes and leave a fucking review, okay? Again, I ask for so little, and that's what I ask for so little of. iTunes reviews. Well, do one.
There was exes and some wannabes. It was reckless, it was understood. It didn't matter cause it felt so good. And I was gonna be here if you changed your mind. But I could see the leaving in your eyes. Don't wanna hear it cause I know it well. I've said it all before to someone else. Baby, don't you talk no more. That look is loud enough. Oh, you don't have to tell me how it feels not to be in love. You see, that was my oldest game. Darling, it was my claim to fame. And I knew it when I met you. All that you would need is more than what I got. Oh, so baby, please just stop. All right, baby.